You're listening to TheBody.com's podcast coverage of AIDS 2008, the 17th International AIDS Conference. The conference took place in Mexico City from August 3rd through August 8th, 2008.
I'm Dr. Urbina, and I work at St. Vincent Catholic Medical Center, and we have a poster here on integrating HIV testing into inpatient hospital settings in New York State. So we know that in New York State, in order to offer HIV testing, patients have to sign a separate written informed consent. And also, historically, testing has been done by designated testers and counselors, so that doctors really haven't felt that it was in their purview to offer HIV testing. So I was really surprised that at St. Vincent's, at the epicenter of HIV infection, where we have a surrounding prevalence of 3 to 4%, that our doctors in training were not offering our patients HIV testing. Okay? And a lot of patients without insurance, all right, use hospitals as their primary care. So a lot of missed opportunities to diagnose patients. And so, for example, a patient comes in with a cellulitis or a heart attack, and if he doesn't have any other means of health care, if you don't offer him an HIV testing, I mean, hospitals are really, I think, showing a bias towards these patient populations. And in my sense, it's a form of institutional racism. All right. So with that background,
why do you think it's institutional racism? Could you talk about that?
Yeah, it's because, I mean, and that's a bit strongly worded. There may be an institutional bias in that organizations that take care of disenfranchised persons really should have a systematic approach to offering them HIV testing, or you're excluding them from life-saving treatment. So that hospitals really should be including and making sure that, you know, operationally they offer HIV testing to their patients that walk through there. Otherwise, that segment of the population that is excluded because they don't have access to healthcare, because they don't have private insurance, are going to be systematically excluded from being offered HIV testing. With that background, what we did is that at our 350-bed inpatient hospital in New York City, we trained 99 medical house staffs to incorporate HIV testing into their routine admissions procedure. So what we did is that, you know, house staff typically, in order to write their notes, they have this history and physical form. So what we did is that we got the New York City Department of Health with a $10,000 grant to actually print for us the informed consent forms, Part A and B, and to embed them or collate them into our history and physical forms, so that when the house staff reached for them, everything was right there. Additionally, we kind of set it up operationally so that the process of offering HIV testing would run very smoothly for them. They could just order it in their lab orders. So, you know, a CBC, LFTs, and HIV test. And then we did these trainings with them. We did them at orientation, and then we did it for this 15-month period, encouraging them really to continue offering HIV testing to their patients. So also then we conducted some pre and post HIV testing implementation questionnaires to measure the house staff's attitudes and practice. And then we also looked at the number of HIV tests that were offered pre and post our implementation. And our results are as follows. So if you look at the number then pre-implementation of our training, there were only 24 tests that were offered per month at St. Vincent's Hospital, all right? And what we did is that we looked at the number of unique admissions, so those that were not HIV positive already, and then those that were offered HIV testing. So out of the 350 unique admissions, there were only 24 tests that were offered a month. So really only 3% of those that could have been offered HIV testing were offered HIV testing, and despite that, we actually found a prevalence rate of 14%. So that's huge. Okay, so after our implementation, we found that our tests that were offered jumped from 3% to 6%. So big deal. Well, that's a 100% increase, but the test offered only went from 24 to 44 tests a month. So even though we increased the rates, really our absolute numbers didn't really increase. So there was some resistance to this training. So then we kind of looked at our focus groups to look at why. And these were some of the things that came out. So if you looked at the provider, providers. Why did they not offer HIV testing? Well, sometimes a lot of them felt that the patient was not at risk because of their age or because of their relationship status, so they did their own risk profiling, all right? They also felt that the patient would be discharged before their result could be returned. Now, initially, the assay that was used was this Bayer automated assay, and it took a day to get the results. Since then, it has changed, so now the lab does a Unigold, so it's a rapid assay, and the results are available that day. All right, and then they also didn't want patients to react negatively towards them. So, you know, if I offer you HIV testing, you know, they're going to think that I'm offering it because I feel that they're at risk or they're in that demographic group. So, again, you know, they would do their own kind of risk assessments, or they would kind of have this emotional baggage. I thought, if I offer testing to you, that you're going to get offended. And then really, the testing process required too much time. I mean, house staff are busy at hospitals, so anything else, you know, that's the that's the straw on the camel's back. So they have a lot of competing interests. So if a patient comes in, you know, they're very difficult to manage, or if they have a heart attack and stuff like that, that, you know, offering HIV testing is going to get dropped. And then, so if you looked at some of the organizational barriers, well, really what we found is that having to have a separate written informed consent, as New York state law requires, big barrier. If it was just out testing, where it was rolled into just the general medical consent, because really, a lot of the times, these forms dropped out of the history and physical, they couldn't find them, or they got lost, or the lab didn't receive them, so they wouldn't run the test. So just having that, you know, secondary step that had to occur really discouraged, I think, a lot of our house staff from offering HIV testing. And there were some other issues as well. And then some of the patient barriers were that, you know, having to give these pre-test counseling points caused patients a lot of anxieties. And what we found was that certain ethnic groups refused testing more than others. So, for example, Muslims tended to refuse HIV testing more, and persons of Chinese backgrounds also tended to refuse testing more, interestingly. And then again, some patients also felt profiled, that they were asked to be tested, and again, offended. And then patients would report that they didn't have any risk factors, and then some patients at high risk for HIV infection often declined testing. So what's our next step is, I think we're very glad that we did the study because we increased awareness in our institution. We were able to make HIV testing operational within our institution. I think even if the New York state laws don't change, which they might, so we may go from opt-in to opt-out, you need buy-in from the institution. So I think our next step is to really, really talk to our chair of medicine, Dr. Dennis Greenbaum, and to speak with our attendings who are on the floors, because imagine that one of our house staff offers HIV testing and then he goes to his attending rounds and an attending says, why'd you do that? I mean, that's just going to really break it all down. So again, really buy-in from the institution so that it really becomes really routinized. But I think most importantly that it becomes part of a physician's culture that he do this and that it's part of his responsibility as a physician so that when he finishes his training, he's going to offer HIV testing wherever he may land.
It's surprising to me, I don't work for a hospital or anything, to hear how difficult it is to implement the CDC recommendations.
Yeah.
And you work for this hospital. It's not like you're an outsider coming in.
Right, yeah.
But it seems it's a very stigmatized disease still among the healthcare practitioners who don't take care of HIV patients.
Right. Even with having a lot of easy access, it was still very difficult to operationalize it and to really get buy-in from our house staff. Not to say that they're not well-intentioned and ethical. It's just that I think for so long, HIV testing has not been part of their education and training, and it really should be, because really doctors should be given back that authority to, you know, take care of their patients effectively, and part of that is offering HIV testing. So I think that there will be a shift, you know, in terms of medical education, but I really think that we have to push forward with it.
It's also surprising to me from a historical point of view in terms of St. Vincent's. I mean, I remember St. Vincent's back in the early 90s, and it was really the epicenter. I mean, the AIDS floor was,
right.
Maybe there were two floors. It was just packed with people living with HIV, dying of HIV.
Yeah.
And I would have thought that most of the personnel working there were sensitized to the situation in some way, and that even the administration would be very like HIV conscious, and everyone who got a job there would have HIV training. I don't know. This is from my knowing of St. Vincent's.
Right. Well, you know something? I mean, I don't think it's very uncommon that most hospitals don't have a system for offering their hospitalized patients HIV testing. I think that they just didn't feel that, I mean, it should or could be done there, that it may be more of an outpatient issue. So I think they just have to shift their focus to realize that, you in our current healthcare system that not a lot of people have access to a primary care physician, and really it's those populations that are most vulnerable. So that we really do have to, you know, pick it up. And that I think for St. Vincent's, they were so involved with treatment and with advocacy and those issues that I think this is something that would just kind of was below the radar. But again, I think we do have buy-in. We just really have to just amp it up a little bit and really make it really part of the culture of the institution.
And what do you think the numbers will be in terms of the number of people tested? I mean, you said that 44 tests a month is low. So what would be, is there a number that you had in mind?
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course, 100%. You asked.
Okay.
I mean, but IOM would really like to, I mean, IOM would like to see it as close to 100% of those that have not been offered HIV testing or do not know their status, have not been tested recently, that, you know, everyone be offered HIV testing. Now, another matter is those that refuse testing, and I think that's another very interesting kind of phenomenon. We didn't really look at it in this poster, but I think that would be an interesting next step, too, to look at those patients that refuse testing and why. Especially, I find very interesting those that are at high risk sometimes often refuse testing. So I think that whole psychological issue of fear and denial, I think, really plays huge in patients. But I think that's where we really have to intervene, because I think we can kind of crack that nut and get those people to consent to test.
Do you think any time in the future an HIV test could be, you know, like a red blood cell count test, or it's just to see if you have an illness? It doesn't say anything about what you did or your life. It's just, do you have this illness? Like what we do with pregnant women, and what we do with all babies born in New York State. It's a lot.
Right.
Every single baby, no one's asked.
Right.
Most people don't even know that their baby's tested.
Yeah, that's why I feel there's a huge disconnect in New York, because you're absolutely right, in terms of pregnancy and that baby bill that was passed by Nettie Mayerson, you know, strong advocacy and acceptance of that, yet in terms of just basic routine offering of testing, there seems to be some type of resistance to that. I'm not really clear where that comes from, but I'm hopeful that that will change as well.
Okay, well, and this is probably one of the things that could help change it. Because are many hospitals in New York doing the same kind? Each hospital, I guess, have to strenuously do the same exact thing, right?
Yeah, they do, because, you know, every institution is a little different and stuff like that. So you find that you really do have to individualize it to your institution. Like, what type of HIV test does your institution use is going to factor into your algorithm and how you kind of set this up. So, I mean, but it can be done. Again, I think buy-in from the top is always helpful, from the chair, and then from the attendings and stuff like that. But I think it can be done if there's a will. The thing is that with opt-in, it's much more expensive than I think if it was opt-out. Because with opt-out, you would just have to set it up once. You just have to roll in HIV testing into the general medical consent, with patients have to sign anyway. And then you basically just have to educate your house staff. But and then if house staff could just easily, that HIV test would just be rolled in, and only if patients verbally said, no, I don't want it, I think it would make it much, much easier, because it would take the onus off of the provider and put it on the patient, which I don't think is so bad.
Right. And one last thing.
Okay.
Were you surprised to see that providers had still so much stigma about HIV? Like, they didn't want to embarrass their patient, or they thought, oh, well, that patient's probably not at risk because she's a white woman, or because she's an old woman, or he's a white lawyer, or, I mean,
yeah.
Were you surprised that that still was in their mind?
Yeah, you know something, I mean, I was, I was not surprised. I think that house staff, especially new house staff, are a little impressionable, and I think, like with a lot of us, they don't want to offend or to have a mishap. But again, I think that has to change, and that we really have to make it that, you know, HIV testing is really life-saving and life-changing, and that you're really in the best interest of the patient to offer, and that really it's okay to be a little aggressive and to really make it a little harder for the patient to say no. So again, I think it's just part of education and really educating our house staff that it is really an important test, and that, you know, patients really should be encouraged to say yes.
And also that surprising people could be positive.
Exactly. Look at Silda Spitzer, right? Who would have thought that she would be at risk for HIV? Not to say that she is or isn't,
right?
But who would have thought about offering her an HIV test? So there are others like her.
Exactly. Great way to end. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebody.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
Thanks for listening to thebody.com's podcast coverage of AIDS 2008. For much more coverage of this conference, including news, research, video, our photo journal, and, of course, more podcasts, visit us online at thebody.com/AIDS2008.